Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Does your company know how to build an effective brand? Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is March 12, 2013. We're on day two of our speed review for this month. The title is Building Your Brand, and you can find it on pages 20 and 21 in your Advanced magazine. And yesterday, we were introduced to the writer of this book titled Brand Real: How Smart Companies Live Their Brand Promise and Inspire Fierce Customer Loyalty. And his name is Lawrence Vincent. So that's what this speed review is about. Our monthly speed reviews, we take books and examine them. Usually it's a business book concept that we need to examine to help make our business better, whether it's a product or management philosophy, strategy, things like that, or maybe predicting things for the future. So always helpful for those of you in business, those of you studying business at some of our universities, and give you some great background on some ideas, what works, what doesn't work in business. So that's why we put the speed reviews in there. And I'm very glad that our panelists are back. My panelists are back today. And let me get a thought from yesterday before we begin today. And first, I'll go over to Nathaniel.
Yeah, yesterday we had Lawrence Vincent, and we were kind of talking about what he thought were the big problems with companies, and this was that they wanted to change the face of their company and not really change the problems inside. They just wanted a new name or a new logo, and that's not enough.
All right, Amanda.
Yeah, I would add on to that. You know, we talked about that specialized term stagecraft, and oftentimes, you also talked about that, Bill, just oftentimes we use something to make it look good on the outside, but really on the inside there's a big mess, you know, that needs to be cleaned up. So I think it's just maybe assessing what you're doing. Are you doing stagecraft, or are you having to look at the deep core problems within your company?
Usually within organizations, it's not just one problem. There are usually multiple problems or multiple issues, I will say, multiple challenges, like we like to say in business. We have challenges, not problems, challenges. And that need to be examined. And it's not just products, but it's a lot of times it's people. It's policies. So there's all sorts of things that go into making a successful company. And you look at a firm like Google. Why are they successful? Well, there's a lot of reasons they're successful. They've got – obviously, they've got a great product, great service. They spend a lot of time and money on research and development. And but there's also – you look at the way that they manage their people. It's very interesting how they manage their people. Very different, right?
They look after them very well.
Yeah, yeah. And the environment is completely different. It's a very humane environment as far as how they treat people. And they make the workplace, I wouldn't say a home, but a very comfortable space, whether it is the meals that they offer in their cafeteria, which are fabulous lunches and dinners that they do offer for their people. And it's a comfortable place that people are willing to work there long hours. They're happy to work there because it is a comfortable place. They get to be creative. Their input is sought. So those are just some of the reasons, treating the people right, giving them the right atmosphere. I would ask many companies out there to examine, how do you manage people? How do you treat people? What kind of environment are you creating? Is it a healthy environment, or is it a toxic environment where people hate to come into work and they can't wait to leave? Do people run out the door as soon as it's time to leave? Are they willing to work on evenings or weekends? Do you seek their input? Do you allow them to be creative, or do you restrict their free flow of thought? You know, a lot of times we look too much at products when really the more important thing is the people in the company. So, okay, now let's get into our reading for today. And it is on page 21. We're going to break it down three ways. And Let me just lead into this first. We ended yesterday. Lawrence Vincent was recapping his meeting with this potential client, and they discussed some things. Ultimately, the potential client decided not to hire him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. He wanted Vincent to do a particular thing. He thought he already had the answer to some degree, and at least there was probably some disagreement on their part somewhere.
Yeah. And actually, he was dictating to Lawrence Vincent what he was going to do, and actually almost he was defining the parameters of the answer that he wanted. He pretty much wanted Lawrence Vincent to come in and design a new product for him, maybe a new logo. And this is actually a really interesting example. We often read in books, in articles about the success stories, right? And we become envious of the success stories. But this is actually a great example for us to take a look at. This is something that didn't quite work out. And maybe we can see something in ourselves in that. We can see ourselves, some of ourselves in the potential client, and also maybe some of the frustration that Lawrence Vincent experienced. We can see some of ourselves in that too. And we can try and learn how to work better in the future. So let's get into today and learn more about the benefit of your brand. And like I said, we'll break it down into three sections today. On page 21, look on the left column. We'll go down to line 19.
The benefit of your brand. Real branding is not about cosmetics, writes Vincent. It's about making a promise and then delivering on it. As Vincent explains, branding works because of how the brain operates. A human brain is required to process much more data than anyone could possibly consciously process themselves. As a result, it relies on cues connected to a series of expectations, which in turn causes automatic, without thinking, reactions. A red octagonal sign automatically causes you to stop because you know what to expect and what to do. If someone put the word go in the middle of a red octagonal sign, you would probably still stop.
The benefit of your brand. Now, we see here real branding is not about cosmetics. And is Lawrence Vincent, is he talking about putting some eyeshadow on and some rouge on my cheeks? What is he talking about?
No, I think he's talking about another form of stagecraft that we mentioned yesterday. When we put on cosmetics, you know, where maybe we're covering up things or, you know, making something more beautiful or what we think is better. And so he's talking about that real branding is not just doing that on the outside.
Okay, now sometimes it's a good word for our listeners to know, when we make cosmetic changes to things, what do I mean?
It's just outside changes. What's inside may not be changing, but what's on the outside, the appearance of it is changing.
Yeah. In the case of a business, give you an example of a cosmetic change. I mentioned that coffee shop before. My coffee shop, I'm using some aggressive pricing and cost cutting. I'm going real cheap, right? Mm. And now if I want to make cosmetic changes to my coffee shop, I might redecorate the place, right? I put new tables in and new window decorations and my countertop is all changed. But if I still have the same old product, that's a cosmetic change, right?
Yeah, you know, what I hear some people sometimes say is, if you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. I think that's the principle, the idea here.
Yeah. So be careful not just to make cosmetic changes and expect miraculous results. You might get a little bump in the beginning. But again, just like that stagecraft, people will see behind the fake buildings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they'll look for the real thing. So now he continues after that period.
It's about making a promise and then delivering on it. Not just outside changes, but saying, this is what we're going to do for you and actually following through on your statement.
All right. Then he becomes a neuroscientist in the next sentence.
He explains, branding works because of how the brain operates.
Mm.
A human brain is required to process much more data than anyone could possibly consciously process themselves.
Okay. This is actually a great sequence here as far as Okay, he's getting into how our brain operates, how we react to things. And we've actually had several articles about neuroscience, the study of how the brain does react to things positively or negatively. And what's he talking about? I like this next sentence as far as process much more data than anyone could possibly consciously process themselves. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it seems like that he's talking about the idea that subconsciously or kind of we are kind of unaware of our brain's reactions to some things because there is so much information that's being input into our brain. We do make conscious decisions, but many other things are not consciously decided on ourselves.
Okay, so when we say consciously process, when I consciously process something, I'm actually thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right? And so what he is saying is that there's too many things for me actually. I don't have enough time in the day to think about all of the decisions mm-hmm. I need to make. So then we get into these subconscious decisions or actually unconscious decisions, which are actually reactions based on a series of expectations, outcomes of what I'm looking for, outcomes. I'm looking for an outcome and I just need to react in things. So, and which in turn causes these automatic reactions. So, continues.
We get an example of what that would look like. Here we have a red octagonal sign automatically causes you to stop because you know what to expect and what to do. So here we're talking about that little sign we see the character holding in the picture, the stop sign. For most people around the world, this means it's an international traffic sign, which means stop.
Okay. You said octagonal, and another pronunciation is octagonal. So I just want to let our listeners know there are two pronunciations of that. I think it depends on if you're in the northern or southern hemisphere, where you hail from. I'm kidding, Amanda, about her New Zealand heritage. So, all right, so there we got a stop sign and octagonal being eight sides. Mm-hmm. And, you would expect what to do, right?
Right, yeah. If someone put the word go in the middle of a red octagonal sign, you would probably still stop. So if you saw this red octagonal sign, you would probably stop, even if it didn't necessarily say stop inside it. You know that red and that shape, and you think, okay, that means I should stop the car.
Hmm. Okay, and this goes back up to what Lawrence Vincent was saying up there in line 8, relies on cues connected to a series of expectations, which in turn causes automatic reactions. So that is a great example of what he's talking about. We don't even think. We just see, react.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we can move that to brands. And that's really what he's getting at in this. We want people to react without really thinking about it. We just want them to make the decision by really without even thinking about it.
Right.
Okay. Let's get into our next reading.
That is how brands work, Vincent writes. They cue your mind to expectations of a benefit. According to Vincent, the expectations or benefit of a brand can be grouped into six common strategic themes, including access, such as low prices, extra hours, or multiple locations, features and functions, which refers to differentiation through the best and or most features, and approach, or how the benefits are created. For example, a company that emphasizes its products are not outsourced is following an approach-driven brand strategy. The final three benefits are the personality of the brand, the cause or moral purpose attached to the brand, and lifestyle. Lifestyle brand strategies are the most common because they speak to a consumer's aspirations.
Okay, and Lawrence Vincent was talking about this automatic reaction in our brain, and he says that is how brands work. We see there in line 20. And how do they work?
They cue your mind to expectations of a benefit. So just like this red sign that cues your mind to think that you should stop the car, a brand can cue your mind to expect a certain kind of product or a certain quality of product maybe as well.
Okay, and we continue in line 22.
Well, according to Vincent, the expectations or benefit of a brand can be grouped into six common strategic themes.
Okay, and we're going to get into that. There is actually a list over there in that little sidebar on page 21, and it does list those six strategic themes which he is talking about. And now we start off with including access.
Access, that's right. Such as low prices, extra hours, or multiple locations. What is the access of this brand like? Where can you find it? How often can you find it? How much does it cost? All these things are parts of this principle of access.
Yeah. Is it easy to get? Is it affordable? Does it fit comfortably into my budget? All right. Next one.
Features and functions, which refers to differentiation through the best and or most features.
Okay. iPhone or a HTC phone or a Samsung phone, those would be really great examples of features or functions. And we see this constantly evolving in technology. Nokia was the leader in mobile phones. And 7-8 years ago was incredible. The market share Nokia had in the world, 70% of mobile phones.
Right.
And completely, they've been, you know, overwhelmed, of course, by the features and functions of the smartphones that have come out from Apple and HTC and Samsung as to where now almost nobody has, very few people have a Nokia phone. All right. It is used in certain markets in the world, but certainly their market share is tiny compared to what it used to be because of features and functions. All right. Next one.
Approach, or how the benefits are created. That is how you approach something is how you do it, how you approach a challenge or a problem. For example, a company that emphasizes its products are not outsourced is following an approach-driven brand strategy. So I can see a company saying, hey, our stuff is made here. We don't send it somewhere else to be done. We do it ourselves. We do it with care ourselves.
Yeah, and that might be trying to emphasize a certain image of the company, right? We have a quality. We have quality standards that go into our productions, right? We're just not making a cheap product somewhere and where we're underpaying people and having it sent here, but we're actually using the best products we possibly can. That is an approach-driven brand strategy. And how do we finish this reading?
We hear about the final three benefits. The first one being personality of the brand. Then we have the causal moral purpose attached to the brand. And then lifestyle.
Okay. I would say here as far as a personality that is representative, okay, has a lot to do with who your target market is.
Right.
All right. There's a way of maybe marketing clothes that you're going to appeal to the 18 to 25 demographic.
Right.
It's going to be very different how you might market automobiles. For instance, like BMW is not going to make commercials that are targeting the 18 to 25 target market.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't want to be seen as a hip cool car for 20-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe smart car would. Mm-hmm. Even Mini. But right. BMW is going to be targeting an older demographic and a higher income demographic. Yeah. That's a personality of the brand to match up with your consumers. What about cause or moral purpose? What do you know of anything like that?
Well, I think sometimes that we do buy something from a particular brand because we know that maybe some of the money is going to some kind of cause or need. That's maybe the product isn't always something that we need or something that is particularly great from this brand. Sometimes we still just buy it because we know it's going to a good cause.
Yeah. Mm. It can go both ways. Right. If the company is involved in a good cause, then people will support that company.
Mm.
And for instance, like I know that Whole Foods works very closely with smaller independent farmers. And so they have a strong customer base in the United States because of their policies towards the small independent farmers. They support local farmers. And so the people realize, well, I'm actually supporting people right here in my city. And so customers will go there and support them. That's a positive.
Well, I think that's where Tom's became successful through that, Tom's shoes. And now they're in sunglasses. But again, they're helping, you know, communities around the world through that product.
Yeah, we actually did that article on Tom's. Mm. And so much of that work is done for charity.
Yeah.
Now, that's the positive thing. The negative, if you go the other way, as far as what might be attached to a brand, I think of, for instance, after the oil rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico a few years ago, people started avoiding BP because they held BP responsible for that explosion, some of their mismanagement practices there. And so then people would not go and fill their car up with gasoline at BP. So it does go both ways as far as a brand. And then we see last one here, lifestyle. That's that last one.
That's right. We see lifestyle brand strategies are the most common because they speak to a consumer's aspirations. So they're the buyer's hopes and dreams or the lifestyle that they're wanting to lead. So they buy these brands thinking, oh, this will fulfill what kind of lifestyle I wish to lead.
Okay. Aspirations being the noun, what would be the verb?
You aspire. You aspire to a certain career. That is the verb form of that word. Many of us have aspirations, and we aspire to do something.
Yeah, I think you mentioned career, and I think of maybe some young people right out of school. They aspire to be a success, and what might appeal to them is a certain style of clothes. They want to dress like a business person. You want a nice suit. You want some nice shoes. You want a sharp look. That fits your aspirations. This is actually who I am going to be in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no longer the university student wearing blue jeans and a T-shirt. I am aspiring to being this success, and so I need to start dressing like this. And that's a great aspiration. Listeners, what are your aspirations? Before you answer that, though, I'm going to ask you to read along with us in our last section.
Brand strategies are just one of the topics covered in Brand Real. Other topics include how to make brands memorable and how to create a brand architecture. The careful organization of brands and sub-brands that allow room for growth, but without, in Vincent's words, sacrificing the essence of the brand's bond with customers. One chapter also explores the mind of consumers and how they attach their identities to brands. Through its detailed frameworks, succinct and relevant case studies, and its focus on aligning brand strategy to business practices, Brand Real explains how to harness the full potential and power of successful branding. No reader will mistake branding for stagecraft.
Bill Quinn here with Amanda Youngpeer and Nathaniel Dunn, and we are wrapping up our speed review, Building Your Brand. We're on our last two paragraphs of this article, the right column there on page 21, and we're going to kind of summarize everything here in the last two paragraphs. And how do we start here in line 5?
Brand strategies are just one of the topics covered in Brand Real. This is just one thing that he talks about in this book that we've been talking about, Brand Real, and we're going to list a few of the other topics that he discusses in his book.
And what are some of those other topics?
Some of those other topics include how to make brands memorable and how to create a brand architecture. We go on to see what they mean by architecture, which is the careful organization of brands and sub-brands that allows room for growth, but without, in Vincent's words, sacrificing the essence of the brand's bond with customers.
All right. Now, I would say as far as this idea of brand architecture, we actually did an article on Uniqlo in December, right, Amanda?
Yeah.
And it was very interesting to see their brand architecture. The founder of Uniqlo actually brought in a retail consultant, looked at their business, and it was not just their products. It wasn't just the clothes. We think of Uniqlo in clothes. But actually what this guy did was he took a look at the stores and how the stores were structured, how they were organized, even how the clothes were displayed on mannequins.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was just one issue. Then the guy also looked at our commercials for Uniqlo.
Right.
And he said, okay, we're going to start identifying. We're not going to use models. Mm-hmm. We're going to use normal people, everyday people, from kids to professors. And then also there was, some location issues. So that is a brand architecture. There's so much more to being successful than just this one little item. Mm. All right? And we find out about some of these things here, the organization of that. The sub-brands is that once a company becomes successful, they might start introducing new products. The problem is the challenge. No problems in business, just challenges. The challenge is, okay, you don't – that this sub-brand one doesn't, take over the original brand in a negative way. Don't let the sub-brand be a negative.
Mm-hmm.
So it might grow into something really fantastic, but don't let it be a negative. So, and that's what he's talking about here, sacrificing the essence, right?
Yes, the essence. The most important part of something, really, I think of the essence as the center, the meaning of something. So the essence of the relationship between the brand and the customers of that brand, this relationship, the bond, the essence of that is what we're talking about.
All right, and then we finish this paragraph.
One chapter also explores the mind of consumers and how they attach their identities to brands.
Okay, and this ties in with our first reading from today. Our first section, as Vincent explains, branding works because of how the brain operates. That's in lines 3, 4, and 5 in the left column. We finish with, through its detailed frameworks, succinct and relevant case studies, and its focus on aligning brand strategy to business practices. And Brand Real explains how to help businesses. Now, first, succinct.
Succinct. If you succinctly communicate something, you're going to say it in a brief way, but also in a clear way. That's succinct.
Relevant.
Something that's applicable and real to real life.
Okay, something important to us. And then aligning.
Aligning. If you align things, you kind of put them together or put them kind of on the same line. They might be next to each other, but aligned together.
Okay. And after that comma, we finish this reading with Brand Real explains how to harness, take control, use the power, the full potential and power of successful branding. I love the last sentence.
No reader will mistake branding for stagecraft.
And why does he say that?
Because it's not just the face of the brand that changes, not just the name, but it's the product. It's the inside workings of the entire process.
Okay, great. Listeners, thanks for joining us, and I hope you learned some interesting things about marketing and branding for your company in this speed review. Thanks for joining us. Come on back next time. Till then, this is Bill.
Nathaniel.
And Amanda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.